This is the Omega 3D Chicken Coop Podcast, and here is your host, Eric Salzwedel.
That's right, I am your host, Eric Salzwedel, and welcome to another episode of the Omega 3D Chicken Coop. Admittedly, this episode has taken me quite a while to put together since about February 24th. I'm just very slow, procrastinator, make up a lot of excuses. Anyway, I have some calls in the hopper, so I'm going to play those and respond to them as I see fit. And then I do have a guest for tonight's show, and we'll get into that after the calls. Sit back and enjoy.
Hi, Eric. Spencer here. I'm not sure I've ever called in before, but just wanted to say it's great to have the Omega 3D Chicken Coop back and fully operational. As a forever player who's been tentatively eyeing up the GM seat over the past few years, I have to say I do have a little bit of anxiety around that. So it was really great to hear Harrigan on the show discussing games for new GMs. Some really awesome suggestions there. I do feel that Harrigan's taste echo my own to a certain degree. So that was a particularly relevant listen. Hell, you even managed to make a chat with Jason sound enjoyable. Just kidding, Jason. Anyway, just wanted to say welcome back and looking forward to more great episodes. No pressure.
Hey, that was Spencer from Free Thrall, Keep on the Borderlands. Appreciate you calling in, Spencer. And I hope your foray into dungeon mastering goes well. And you should give me a call back and let me know how it goes. I have been holding on to that call way too long, so I appreciate Spencer being patient. And I will post a link to his podcast in the show notes. Once again, thanks, Spence.
Hey, Eric. Thank you and thanks, Sean, for that engaging discussion about what it is to make a good campaign and talking about the trials and tribulations, the failures and successes that you all have gone through. It just helps me to really reflect on the campaigns that I'm currently running and why they're succeeding, and to think about campaigns, bygone campaigns that have failed and why they failed. And it was very fascinating to me to reflect upon that. I think you pretty much covered everything, and I kind of agree. I think the key things to me that I guess keep me engaged as a GM in the campaign are player engagement and keeping the tone. I think I've kind of like not been as enthusiastic about a game because the player characters, for example, make silly characters with silly names, and I just can't get into that. Or I think the other thing is, you know, when I get really excited about a game and do a lot of prep, and I think you guys mentioned this, the expectation is, okay, I've done a lot of prep, the players need to engage and see what's going on or engage with the world, and then they don't, then it's kind of disappointing. But then it's like, it's really weird in some of my campaigns, the campaigns that are successful, there is player engagement, but the thing is, it's like not all the players engage. So is that a good thing or a bad thing, I guess? I guess that's a question. Like, for example, I would say my Twilight 2000 campaign, I would say people enjoy it and they really like to play it. That's for sure if people show up. But as far as engagement and driving the story, it's really like, I would say, two players that are doing that. And that helps. That helps keep the campaign going. Similarly, my almost a year-long game of, I can't even remember the name, of Traveler, right? I think in that one it's a little different, though. Like, all the players are engaged in their own way. And the tone is, you know, space trucking, space opera, golden age sci-fi, right? So it works, and that's pretty cool. So, I don't know. It's a very interesting... I know, like, we've been running this like Enemy Within campaign for Warhammer Fantasy, and it's a great group of guys, my home group that I play with all the time. But yeah, I don't know. I wish there was more. Is this bad? I don't think they don't listen to podcasts anyway, but I just wish that there was more, and maybe they engage in their own way. I just wish there's more interaction outside of game, but talking about the game, because I just get jazzed for the game and the world, and I don't know. I just don't see it. Maybe they're getting tired of me. Maybe we're getting tired. We're on halfway through book four of five. So I don't know. Maybe we need to take a break. But then when I suggest a break, it's like, no, we got to get this done. Chop, chop. We got to get this done. At least I think I thought that something cool that Sean Kelly did say, like, shorten things or break them up. Like, for example, in my Star Wars game, I think I inadvertently followed his advice and decided to stick with, like, a season, right? This is season one. This is where it's going to end, and then we'll pick up season two. I don't know where or really when, because we got games we want to jump or throw in between and see where it goes. So I think that's a great suggestion that you guys put forth. I probably rambled more than you need to, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, and that was Carl from the Geomologist Presents podcast. Thanks for calling in, Carl. I have played in several games with Carl. I've run a couple games for him, and I've played in his games. Fun games, good times. And I just want to highlight one thing Carl talked about there, and it's about engagement. And for me, that's an important element too. And it's not just engagement at the table and when the players are playing, but it's also something I've strived for in other games and failed, is trying to get that out-of-game engagement in between sessions. And I think I just had to come to the realization that those of us that are on the Discords, really talking about games, listening to podcasts, you know, we're just like, you know, maybe it's our only hobby, or we're just like really into this hobby. So we want that. And other people might be more casual players, and might be medium hardcore, or maybe they only can be hardcore at that moment, at that time at the table, because, you know, they have life circumstances that prevent them from being hardcore into the game outside of those situations. So once again, thanks, Carl, for the call. And I'll make sure I include Carl's stuff, like his info. That's what I meant, like his stuff, in the show notes. All right, on to the next call.
Eric, this is Gabe Dibbing calling in. Well, I'm recording because you don't have anything that allows me to naturally call in. I am going to, well, you'll find this. You'll see how I get this to you. I'm calling in because of your conversation recently with Sean about, can't remember the exact topic, but it was basically, it made me so depressed about how difficult it is to play with other people. And it made me think of, actually, Sean probably is aware, because this was kind of going on, well, the first thing was going on while he had his own show. But it made me think of the really good games that you have going. I think the worst thing is when you have a really good thing going. There's a lot of shared energy, fantastic creativity going on, and then the game ends. And it always is, in both instances, the first one was really hard, but in both instances, it's just really emotionally tough. And I think it might be because of just the art of creation and everyone who's involved. The first one was my Swords and Wizardry game. It was a COVID game. It was online. It was people I played with in person a little bit. And then when COVID happened, they actually approached me and they wanted me to run Swords and Wizardry. And that game lasted for about a year. This is the one that I think Sean might remember. But it's funny. I mean, like, I would share about some of my frustrations with the game publicly on Sean's podcast. And we all were very invested in the game. And I think that's probably why when the game ended, it hurt so much. Because everyone was so invested into it. I was the referee, but the two other players, we were trying to get other players into it. No one was really interested in our non-porous, very, very specialized world that we had crafted together. They had characters that they just loved dearly, that had deep backstories and were connected to the world. And I think this is why I was having some frustrations, is Brett brought up the term turtling. They shared with me that they were intentionally trying not to adventure because adventuring is dangerous. And it is because of my dissatisfaction about this that I think some feelings were hurt. And two of the three of us decided it was just best to just take some time off, which meant that was over. The other game was actually a Conan game recently. It was a fairly recent one that I just finally just had to quit. And it is because even though all the players in it were fantastic, again, it was this experience where really cool characters, totally under the ownership of their players. And I'm just putting stuff in front of them to see where this would go. Carefully exploring each of the three characters through a campaign. You talked about it, but it's just, I think Sean is the one that had the most experience with this. There was one player that we just could not get to the table. It was the strangest thing. Once we would get him there, he was like, this is my favorite game. I have so much fun. And he was a really great role player. But it's personal issues. Why could you not just recognize that we play this game at the same time every week? Just come to the game online. It's virtual. And so that was just enough. Even though it was probably one of the best games I had ever been running, I finally was just like, do you know what? I'm sunsetting this. We're going on hiatus, which basically means this game is over. So yeah, it's tough. I just want to share, maybe you guys didn't address that, just like games end for a number of reasons, but it's particularly rough when they are really great games, when they are works of art and everyone has contributed their role to making this beautiful edifice. And then we just end it for whatever reason. So thanks, Eric.
That was Gabe. And beautifully put, Gabe, with your story of the sadness of any games. And I'm sorry if Sean and I brought you any sadness this day. But Gabe is actually going to be the special guest on tonight's show. But before we get to that, I just kind of want to respond to what Gabe said. It is emotional to end a game, even when the game has a known end, right? Like, will that group of players ever band together and adventure with each other? Will that game master ever create for those players again? I don't know. I haven't played with my old high school group where we reunited in 2018. We haven't played a tabletop game in some time. We've recently played board games, but we haven't played a tabletop game. Are we going to play again? I'm sure we will, maybe. Hopefully, before we die. I was playing with Jason and Joe on Monday nights, and I haven't been. We were running ICRPG Vigilante City, and that ended. Got to a point where I was like, hey, this is where I was planning on ending this. You guys beat the big bad. It's over. It was an experiment. But I haven't played with Joe since then, and I enjoy playing with Joe. He's fun, really good role player, really gets into it. And just yesterday, I told my players in the Solar Blades game, hey, we're done. Now, we were past the point of where I thought we were going to be done. And I was like, well, why not do a little more? The players were very good. They were into their characters. I was having a lot of fun generating stuff using some of the AI generative tools that are available. And, you know, I even had a little bit more where there was going to be a big battle. Spoiler alert. But it was just like, okay, we've had some cancellations. It's been a mix mostly on me. We were playing every other Monday, and I think I need a weekly game to ensure that we have at least two sessions a month. When you do it every other week, one cancellation, and all of a sudden it's one game out of every 4 weeks. So, yeah, it sucks. It's, you know, I like playing with those guys. I don't know if they're going to be in my next Monday night game. I know one of the players already has kind of a every other Monday thing going, so he's probably not going to be available. But anyway, I didn't mean to make you sad, Gabe. And anyone else who was sad after that episode, I blame Sean. But what I do want to get into is the main topic with Gabe himself. And we're going to be talking about tone. Now, this conversation starts as if it's right after the intro music, but then I forgot I had all these calls and wanted to do this piece, so it sounds like it's the beginning of the podcast. It's not really the beginning of the podcast, and on top of that, it's a bit of a long conversation, and I've already done a bunch of talking up front, a bunch of phone calls, so this might be a two-parter for you. All right, well, sit back and enjoy the show. That's right. This is the Omega 3D Chicken Coop, and I am your host, Eric Sals. We don't have a very special guest tonight. I have Gabe, who I know from the Gaming and BS Discord server. And Gabe, welcome to the Coop. How are you doing?
I'm doing so good. I love this gelatinous cube that I'm sitting in right now, getting engulfed in among the black lights of your dank and dismal dungeon, which is the coop.
You know what? Gabe pointed out I forgot to hit the record button the first time, our intro, and I like that intro better. So thank you, Gabe, for bringing that in like that. It's always better the second time, as they say. Yeah, so anyway, like I said, I know Gabe from the Gaming and BS Discord server. We've talked a few times. We've met at Game Hole. I don't think we've ever played in a game together, though. Not that I can recall.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, man. You did. You did. You ran a play-by-post Conan game for me.
Oh, yeah. That was maybe the beginning. And do you know what? This is so funny, man. You actually ran Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells, and I was in one of those games.
Which one was it?
I don't know which one. I know you've run it so many times, but I have played
was Solar it with Mirko?
Cosmic Spells. I don't remember. Mirko's. I only remember you. Your energy just blew out all the other players that I was with. All I had was Saul's Weedle on the brain for that entire game.
Do you remember what your character was?
No, I have.
That must have been a while ago.
I actually don't even remember the adventure very well. It was all I know was it was bonkers, man. It was some high-flying space fantasy.
It can get a little wild. So, well, now that I know something there, I feel bad that I don't remember that. I remember Mirko and Hoos in a game. You must have been in that game.
I was probably in that game.
You had to assume so. I'm going to assume you're in that game. Very dignitaries in the Gaming and BS Discord world, then the highest of the high. So Gabe has the Analytic Dice podcast, which he's on with Kevin from Burn 2D6. And as I stated in the recording that no one will hear, Kevin's Burn 2D6 game is a pulp action, multiple type settings type game that you can get on DriveThruRPG and maybe other places that I don't know. But either way, both of those will be in the show notes. Gabe, one thing I always like to talk about is what we're drinking tonight.
All right.
Yeah, what are you rocking tonight?
I'm gonna crack it now. I am drinking Press Premium Alcohol Seltzer, a whole 4% of alcohol in this lime lemongrass extravaganza, which I'm going to crack right now.
Lime and lemongrass, it almost sounds healthy.
These things are antioxidants. They very well may be, right? Yeah. This might actually be prolonging my age rather than deflating it.
Yeah, you're looking younger than when you're at Game Hole. Those seltzers are really...
How's that possible?
Are really helping you. I'm also drinking what some others might not call a super tough guy drink, but I'm drinking a Dr. Pepper cream soda, zero sugar, and toffee rum. But it isn't a rum glass. I decided to use my special rum glass, so there you go.
Excellent. We did discuss drinking... bourbon, but we decided Thursday night was not a bourbon night.
Yeah, we're recording this on a Thursday night. I have to work tomorrow. I don't know if Gabe does.
I do, sort of.
Yeah, I as well. I'll be working. It's a Friday, so we'll see. All right, so I brought Gabe on tonight to talk about tone inside of role-playing games, and specifically real quick, Gabe, before I get into that, what I know you have some other products. We talked about it. Can you want to talk about those real quick? And I'll also include a show link.
Sure. Eric didn't. He said he didn't know my last name, which is fair. Even though, do you know what? It is Gabe Dibbing. Not even here, but like if you go into the BS or Discord, it's Gabe Dibbing.
I just read that as is Gabe dying, and I thought it was just like some sort of like symbolism something.
Dibbing, they pronounce it Dibbing in Norway, and it is the name of a farm near Egersund on the west coast of Norway, and so that's what my family adopted 4 generations ago when my namesake, another Gabriel Dibbing, came here to the United States. And so Gabe Dibbing, my stuff can be found, probably the links, the best ways to, if you are a BSer person, go to the Discord server and come to my little shop called, I think it's called 2D20 Sword and Sorcery Role Playing. So my favorite game, Moodypheus's Conan, Adventures in an Age Undreamed Of, has sunsetted, and now the Conan license has moved on to Monolith, and I'm trying to keep the dream alive. I've published 2 adventures now for 2D20 Sword and Sorcery Role Playing. They're available exclusively on DriveThruRPG underneath Moodypheus's license. It's called, I can't remember, World Builders. I think it's the Moodypheus World Builders community or something like that. The second one is a lot of fun because you won't be able to see the cover unless you look in the quick little flip book because it features a full nude.
Oh, yeah, very Conan.
That's there. Really exciting, right?
Yeah.
And so there might be some other products coming out in the future, including a better version, in my opinion, of the Conan 2D20 rules written by me. From open-ended games, my other favorite game is Against the Dark Master, which is a update of Middle-earth role-playing, Iron Crown Enterprises Middle-earth role-playing, which is Rolemaster. I'll have some things coming out with that from them someday, but of my own, basically a game aid, expanded tables for generating a Dark Master and stuff like that. So
awesome. Yeah, we'll get those in the show notes. So if anyone wants to go check out those products, they can. I own some 2D20 stuff. I think I bought it on like one of those Humble Bundle ones, you know, where it's like
you have all the Conan then.
I could just get every Conan thing for like $50, and it's like hard not to get it, even though I'm probably never going to use it. But
you never know. I might need this. I'll totally need this, right? I better be prepared.
my Humble Bundle account is a shame. It's just all the things in there that are, yeah, I don't even want to log into it. It'll make me sad. All right. So Gabe talked about his two favorite games, and that's the reason why I'm bringing him on here, because I want to talk about tone. And in my opinion, games like Conan and anything that's kind of Tolkien inspired has a very specific tone to it. It needs to be played with a certain tone. Otherwise, you're not playing Conan or Tolkien. So that's why I brought Gabe on to talk about that. So first off, Gabe, would you agree, I mean, in your opinion, that the tone of the game is one of the things that helps drive what a Conan or Tolkien game is and why that might be important?
Yes. You phrase it as a yes, no question. It's just too easy to answer a question like that.
So expand. Why do you think that's important?
Okay. Now you got me. Expand. That's one of the most important things. Well, you know what? So I think what I'm too laser focused on those, my two favorite subcategories of genres of a fantasy genre, if you will. Tone is important for anything that you're going for. So I think we're kind of just talking about when we sit down at a game, what is it that we want to experience together? We establish this is the thing that we want to explore and we want it to feel this way. We're interested in it feeling like this for this game group and for however long we're going to play it. And I think the key here, and this might actually drive some people crazy, and I have an anecdote I can tell about it. I'll start here. I'll wax eloquent for you, Eric. So I also used to publish a small magazine called, this is going to sound really weird, everyone was like, come again now, whenever I would say the title of the magazine to people. Maury Fock Magazine. What?
Okay.
And what Maury Fock is it's coffee room backwards. So I just got to explain that really quick. And because that was what the magazine was going for was a certain kind. This is great. The magazine was going for a certain tone. It was going for a certain genre. It was ostensibly a magazine that published fantasy, but we wanted specifically Maury Focky in fantasy. What are you talking about? What we are talking about is fiction in the mythic tradition or Maury Focky in fantasy. And what we meant by that was like fiction that was in the tradition specifically of the Inklings from Oxford, Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, Charles Williams, and some of the people that they respected, George MacDonald, Lord Dunsany. I can't think of too many others. Or else something that was just when you see something in the normal world, it was just slightly askew, just slightly left of center. And this comes from a anecdote that Charles Dickens told that was later retold by G.K. Chesterton and then also shared in J.R.R. Tolkien's seminal essay on exactly what we're talking about on fairy stories, where Tolkien lays out his entire genre agenda about what is good fantasy. And this was the type of fantasy we wanted. And the anecdote was basically one day Charles Dickens was walking around steamy London, right? And he saw this wondrous word that captivated him, that filled him with wonder. It just seemed exotic, come from some far off land, Morifach. And then he realized that he was just seeing the backside of a pane of glass, and it said coffee room. But that was the idea, to be able to look at the mundane and natural through a new lens, from a new perspective, to suddenly see how just mind-blowing just reality is, just mere being is. That was supposed to be what it was. And that's a bit what Tolkien says, is you go into the magical woods and encounter elves, so that when you come to a natural woods, even the natural woods now are tinged with that fairy that you have experienced in story. So here's why this is the anecdote I'm getting to with tone. I rejected someone's story, and I said, oh, I see what's happening here. I said, there's been a misunderstanding. When we said we were looking for mythic fiction, we didn't mean we are looking for myths. Just it's because this guy had sent me something that was just crazy. Like some of the most archetypal myths that you encounter, where just madness is going on. It wasn't like a story, right? And he said, I don't understand why a young, small magazine like you would be holding yourself to such narrow standards. And so we started like a little public debate that I published in the magazine. And this is what I'm getting down to, Eric. This is my long-winded way of getting there for gaming, is I think tone is established by excluding things. When you would decide that you're going to tell a certain story, you can't be like, hey, let's just lean into it. And let's just open our minds and just see where this goes. That game is fine. You can almost call that game Dungeons and Dragons, but if you are going for a certain thing, what you are setting down is the rules, and the rules are, no, we're not going to let that person in the club. This is an exclusive club, and no myths are allowed in my magazine that publishes mythic fiction, so to speak. Right. And that's what I said to him. I told him that art, I think the very definition of art is choosing which elements you're going to use and only those elements, and excluding all others. Otherwise, it just becomes a chaotic mess. It becomes what, black or white?
Well, you know, like a Jackson Pollock painting?
Yeah, maybe.
That totally makes sense to me. And I think sometimes when you put it that way, that's going to turn some people off. There might be some, there's like five people that listen to this, and there's going to be a couple of them. They're going to be like, well, you're excluding, or you're creating a barrier, or you're gatekeeping. You were gatekeeping in that magazine. That's
exactly what it is.
And I don't like using that term, so we're not going to use it the rest of the night because it has a bad, because it could cause other things, right?
Sure. We're talking about a certain thing that we're keeping out of our game, right?
Yes. Yeah. And we're not talking about keeping like a person out of their game because of their race, color, creed, sexual orientation, or what planet they're from, right? We're talking about, hey, I understand you want to play a gunslinging dwarf in my Tolkien game. It's just not going to work because...
What are you saying? Gunpowder doesn't exist in this world, man.
Yeah.
My dwarf is super smart. He's in alchemy and he's a smith, and he forges the first gun.
Have you had this argument before in one of your games?
Okay. Well, there you go. I'm just playing that person, yeah. Right?
Because
we've all met these people and we've had them in our games. You've had them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no,
so
it's true.
That's why it's so easy to roleplay that.
So yeah. And a lot of the games I run, they're pretty kind of open. Like Solar Blades, you played in it. It's like it's a science fantasy, sword and planet. It can be all different kinds of things. And so there's a lot of things that I can be like, yeah, that works, because it is pretty wide open. It's got a lot of things in the buffet. But there are a couple things that aren't on the buffet. And one of them is the internet. One of the whole tones of the game is that communication between the sectors has been cut off by the Galactic Overlords, and we've almost been thrown into like a Dark Ages type science fiction world where people don't understand how the technology works. It's degraded. There's tons of entropy. So information is scarce. Information is important. People will buy information. You can't communicate between sectors. There's no long-range transmission through wormholes. If you find something that can do that, it's an extremely powerful artifact. So I've had people come into the game and not understand that and think that it's Star Wars, right? And so they come in and are expecting Star Wars. And I'm like, that doesn't exist. And there, so there's a lot of like kind of correcting. And at times I feel like when I'm correcting tone, I'm being that game master that's, no, this is my world. This is the way it is. Which, you know, if you go on X, you can see a bunch of threads about people complaining about that. And there are times though, where I think that's appropriate, right? If we're running a human-centric campaign and someone comes in and says, I want to play a cat person, you'd be like, dude, I have a whole cat person game that I'll run, but this isn't the game for cat people. And then people will get upset that you won't let them be cat person because, and they're like, why can't I just be a cat person? And you're like, well, it doesn't fit the tone of this game, this one particular experience that I, even as the game master, because I think some people forget about that, is we too want to experience a certain feeling and an aspect, and I think that's important. And I'll admit there have been times where I didn't understand the tone the game master wanted to go for. We were playing Monster of the Week, and my friend was running the game, and I think I've commented this on Jason's podcast and probably other probably on this podcast before. I don't remember, but we didn't set the tone that he wanted. He wanted he wanted to show like Supernatural, and we were doing like A-Team and Scooby-Doo. That's what we were doing, right? So it wasn't the right tone. And one of the things he didn't like in the game was the fact that Monster of the Week, you just check what equipment you have, right? And one of the things you can check is like, you have a gun. And so in his head, Mark, if you're listening, you can always correct me. In his head, it was like, he didn't like the idea of people just walking around with guns. He didn't want that type of game, but the tone inside the game with guns and the monster hunting, right? But the character sheets built it in. So there was a little bit of kind of like a conflict between the game mechanics, or at least the character creation process, and the tone of the game. And yeah, I'll be the first one to admit when he was like, oh, I really don't want you guys to have guns. I'm like, but I get to pick one. It's on my character sheet, like one of the equipment, it's a starting equipment. I only get to check so many of these, and I want to check the AK-47 because that's what my character gets to have, right? And yeah, and as a player, if you don't understand the tone or not bought in, you might get frustrated by that.
And thinking about your topic, when you invited me onto your show, that's one of the things I thought about is a tone, I think, actually begins with the game that you all choose to play. And so I don't know if that's a failing of Monster of the Week, because I think that Monster, I've never played it myself, but what I've heard is Monster, that's one of the cultural references that is brought up around that game, is it's like Supernatural.
Yeah.
And so, but Supernatural, here's the other, so Mark, apparently now, nice to hear about you, Mark. The other thing though too is Supernatural, they have guns in that show, and so now I'm a little bit more curious about, we have two things. We have the intention of the GM, who's host of the experience and wants buy-in from everyone else, and then a secondary host, which is the rules, the game, and everything that that game is trying to say as well. So there's a interaction there, and there, it might be difficult to try to find out where game, GM, players, there was a breakdown in this expression of what our intended tone is here.
Yeah, and it totally can happen, and it can be multiple things. You can choose the wrong game. You could, as the game master, this has happened to me too, where I think something's a certain tone, and you know, someone's like, yeah, that's not the tone you were going, you did this. And I'm like, no, I didn't. And then, you know, 2 weeks, month later, you're sitting there thinking, you're like, oh, that person was right. I think they're right. I think I messed that up, or I was going for something completely different, right? Or as a player, it's you're in the game and you're like, afterwards you're like, ooh, I think I had the wrong tone for that. I don't think I did that right. You know, I don't think I played within the tone of the game. You know, that player seemed frustrated. That game master seemed frustrated. So let's talk about how do you establish the tone? What are some of the things that you do so that the players coming in know what the tone of the game is? And then what are some of the, how do you leverage that? How is the game master, storyteller, whatever the game guy running the game is called in your particular game, how do you do it then?
Well, and everyone who listens to podcasts are just so, including myself, are so sick of hearing about session zero. But of course, so I would say there's two things. It's session zero, which is basically setting and aligning expectations about the game, beginning at the from the pitch, beginning in the very earliest communication you're having with people who might want to join your game. This is what I'm thinking it's about, right? Elevator pitch, you know, kind of another overused idiom. And then you get to session zero where you really, really hash it out. There's that. One is setting expectations early. And then the second thing, the only other thing I think I can do is modeling in game. So most of the time when I'm interested in setting tone, I suppose this would happen sometimes when you're a player, right? And you're like, oh, I wanted the game to be like this. Maybe it's going wrong. So now I'm going to show other players what I'm like as a player. I think I probably do it as both now that I think about it. But when you play, either as the GM or the player, when you just kind of have to know the material too. I think Jason Connerly was talking about this, steeping yourself in, I think it was when he was interviewing someone, steeping yourself. No, I think it was him too. Steeping yourself in the source material that you're trying to emulate in the game. So maybe there's three things. Session zero, you need to know the tone yourself. Pickle yourself in that so that when you are GMing or playing, you can model it, the proper behaviors, the proper game culture at the table for everyone else. And maybe they'll get infected. It's like improv. They'll pick up the vibe and they'll play it back.
Yeah, that's the dream, right? That you kind of set the tone and then it goes like that. One of the other things I've been using a lot lately, so what I find is when I'm playing at a table, I really like battle maps and minis out, but not like where we're measuring with rulers or not even hexes. I just like physical representations of what's happening, but only in person. Online, I do use like Owlbear Rodeo for tokens if it's like a really complicated battle. But I've been using a lot of just pictures to try to set like what is the tone of this game, right? So when I ran Final Round, which is my yet to be released Street Fighter inspired tabletop role playing game, I ran in a game in BSRCon. That's what we didn't have any battle maps. Everything was like I put up a picture so you could see. What do these characters look like? And they look like Street Fighter characters, right? To get you in the mindset of like, I am a Street Fighter character. I need to act like a Street Fighter character. You know, this is what this thing looks like, the room you're in. This is what the city looks like, you know, like trying to really establish for me, visual helps a lot. So I was like, okay, that's if it helps me, I'm going to, anyone else who's like me or similar to me, I'm going to throw those out there. So that's another tool that I use is I'll try to, if I can find visuals that will, that I think will establish the tone, then I do it, right? And another thing that I found effective is the Hyperborea, Astonishing Ash 2nd Edition. I'm not going to go in the whole name. But they had like, when they were doing like a sale or like doing a push on the 2nd Edition books before 3rd Edition came out, there was like, he released like this really cool YouTube video. And it just had like, it had kind of like heavy metal music and just like clips of art from the book.
Yeah, man. And like, I remember it well.
Yeah.
I funded that second edition and shared it with some friends.
Yeah.
And that made me a little promo video. Yeah.
That promo video made me want to buy the game because I was like, oh, cool. If it looks like that and feels like that, I want that game in my hands. Right. Another game does an excellent job with tone, just in appearance. And the way it sets up the game is Neon Lords of the Toxic Wasteland. I don't know if you've looked into that, but I mean, you just look at the cover on this thing and it totally gives you a vibe of what it is. You can play like an android in it that all the androids look like Ronald Reagan. So what happened is the apocalypse happens in like 1980 in the 80s.
Okay.
And then it's and you're playing it after that. So that's the vibe it has, and it, it's a game
And
where
so,
you
like, even though the president was dead, they had to maintain the illusion that the president was alive, and
don't
the factory
remember.
got a little out of control, and every android was printed as a Reagan.
I don't know the exact details of why the cyber skins all look like Reagans. I remember I read it at one point but forgot. But it the game itself, it does an amazing job of establishing tone. So going back to your second point, or I don't know where it was. Oh, you said begins with the game. I agree that certain games are really good at establishing the tone of the game. Session zero, setting aligning expectations. Let me ask you something about session zero. So you're going to start up a Against the Dark Master campaign. Do you vet anyone that wants to play, like that they know, like what a Tolkien type game is like?
That's a great question. That reveals a lot, actually. So we actually just had session zero on Tuesday, and it was fantastic. I don't know if I've ever had such a good session zero. Of course, what'd you call people like Hoos and Mirko and Harrigan? They're like the
Dignitaries. Yeah.
dignitaries. Yeah, of
Yeah.
course it's stacked with dignitaries. Those three are in the game, and then Chad, who goes by Gunderman, who is one of my favorite gamers of all time. So shout out to you, Chad, man. Yeah, they were fantastic. But if you're talking, I know that this goes on, like this idea of like especially online, if you don't know people, like you have interviews, right? Make sure that they're going to be a proper fit. And when it comes to Against the Dark Master, my instinct when you ask that, and I don't know if I should even say this, but I think I'm actually most suspicious of Rolemaster gamers.
Okay.
I don't know if I actually want any Rolemaster players because, and I think I've had this issue with like Pathfinder too. Sometimes these games attract like a certain very mechanically minded type of gamer. And so, and there's a disconnect, right? So there you go. We could talk about that. I mean, some like when people what people are looking for in a game. I guess part of setting expectations and part of your selection process is how important to you is the tone, right? What's going to happen at the table, and recognizing that that is in some degree, even though I say it begins with the game, and I think that the game has a lot of responsibility and does a lot of the lifting and establishing the tone, there's still enough of it that is uncoupled from any mechanics that you do need a certain type of person. And there's a lot of people who are drawn to games like Against the Dark Master, especially with a background in Rolemaster, who just are really interested in that simulationist experience, which is not precisely how I personally run Against the Dark Master, I'm finding, and not how a lot of people play Against the Dark Master.
So even though, so that's an interest, you might have actually brought a new tone to this, or it's maybe it's a tone that's always existed. I've never thought about categorizing it. If the tone is the sim is the mechanics, so someone doesn't care about Tolkien. They couldn't care about Tolkien. They fell asleep, or they after Bilbo's birthday party planning, they just were like, I can't read this book anymore. This Tom Bombadil guy
Just
and his
goes on and
singing.
on. Who's
Yeah,
this Tom
just go.
Bombadil
But they're like, I like Rolemaster, and that's their tone. Their tone is the simulationism. If someone's playing Harn, and
Who's
they want that, yeah, who's checking in? And they want that like very detailed, like they know where the spear hits and how deep the wound is, and it's going to take, 6 months to heal, or they're going to get gangrene or whatever. Yeah, there's very specific. I think that there are mechan I think there are people that are more about the mechanics than they are about the tone, and that just is the tone for them. Like I do agree that I think in general the Pathfinder players that I have met are more into the builds, and some of them pick up on the lore of the Paizo world, and some of them are both into the lore and the mechanics, but the majority of people I see are about what is the most optimized character that I can build. That's just my personal experience. If someone else has other experiences, then totally fine with that. This is just my own anecdotal experience. But yeah, that is interesting, is that, you know, if someone's coming in because they like Rolemaster, they might not like the way you run the game or the tone of the type of game you're playing.
Right. They might not even get it. And so, and we've run into that. Like, I was in a game run by a friend of mine, Simba Room. And it's even with modeling tone, like it could be really difficult. Simba Room has a very specific tone. You're probably familiar with it.
Yeah. Eric, I was going to say that's another game that's a tone based game.
And it was a bit painful playing the game. But unfortunately, the campaign ended. The GM was hurt. And in part, it was because of some of the gamers seemed to be misaligned with the tone. And I would say they were playing the game as if it was Dungeons and Dragons. And to this aspect of Dungeons and Dragons, where when story was going on in a room of a house, something really terrible was happening with some NPCs, and what is going on, one character decided, I'm just going to go upstairs and loot their house. Right? You know, these kind of activities, and this could totally happen in my Against the Dark Master game with a certain type of role master gamer, right? Some people bring their culture, their codes, their, you know, modus operandi into what they perceive as the game. However it is you pitch it. I should give Conan a little bit of love too. Not my Against Dark Masters on my brain, but like I've run into some things with Conan too, where people's expectation, you would be like, Conan, you get it. No, they don't. Where their expectations about Conan is some kind of like misogynist who, you know, likes to laugh at women who are in embarrassing situations, and just, you know, just a big muscle man who just, you know, takes what he wants, and they play just really roguish characters. Not to say that there's not, you know, rogues in Conan, but a type of cultural perception of Conan, which I think is, I mean, some people have presented Conan as such. I think Robert Jordan, his novels about Conan really portray the worst the worst version of Conan. Yeah, I think that guy kind of like misunderstood. But you get that. If you're running Conan, people might think that, okay, so it's sword and sorcery, it's like this. Or even sword and sorcery, right? Some people's definition of sword and sorcery is, and I love to say it, if you, one of the, can't remember the volume exactly, but Lynn Carter and L. Sprague de Camp, they wrote an introduction to one of the Conan books. And they dedicated it to J.R.R. Tolkien, the most popular and famous master of sorcery and swords play that there was. They had an interesting name for it. But in the 80s, it was all indistinguishable, right? Tolkien was basically the same thing as Conan. And we hadn't really settled into these nuances that we're so into today. And so people, even if you like pitch, you know, this is the genre, this is a subcategory. Yeah. People can be misaligned and not even know it.
Yeah. And I want to be clear to everyone too. Cause sometimes when I listen to these kind of conversations, I might think that I don't want to come across as that I'm pretentious with like the tone thing. Cause some games I play exactly what you're talking about. It's, we're just going to go in and kill orcs, which is probably a tone in itself, right? Where we're just playing kind of, a lot of people call like beer pretzels type gaming, which I run quite a bit, but there are times when you do want to establish a certain tone just because it's the type of game you want to play. And there are people. So for me, example, I'm not a huge sword and sorcery gaming fan. I haven't read a lot of the literature. I have watched a lot of movies. I went through a kick there where I was like on Amazon Prime, like trying to find every like early 80s, like late 70s, like sword and sorcery movie that I could watch.
I'm there right now making my way through them.
Yeah. And I think because a lot of them have nudity. And so I think people think that, and there is some, I mean, it's also, it's created in a different time, right? And it's written you know, it's at a different time. So there is some male like misogyny that is, sure, that is occurring in them. But I think that some people, like you said, probably overemphasize that because they think that is what it's all about, when it's not all about that necessarily. So, but yeah, the tone is that is interesting. And yeah, someone coming in and not understanding the tone can really make things difficult. And I've had that too before. I was running a game, and the player missed session zero. They were added afterwards. And I was like, yeah, sure, bring in a different player. And it just didn't jive the way they wanted to play the game with the way I wanted to run it. And there were just moments where it was like, it just, what happens is you get into a flow, right? You're game mastering, players are playing, and this thing happens, and it's like jarring. It's like slamming on the brakes, and it kind of pulls you out of what's happening. And you're kind of like, whoa, wait, what just happened? Like, what'd you say?
And
you
now it's
do?
Happened. And now it's, there's no going back. Right. Yeah. I mean, you can, okay, fine, I won't do that, but it's just so awkward and over.
Yeah,
right?
I know. And then you're like, and then you feel like the guy who just like pooped in someone's Cheerios because they wanted right? to do this certain thing. And you're telling, and so so it's tough. Cause I try not to have that reaction, you know, but it's hard sometimes, because sometimes it can, like, yeah, you could be totally immersed in what's going on and you're feeling it, you're seeing it in your head, and the person says, I do this, and you're like, what can you, hey, I just want to be clear, you said that you're going to do this, and they're like, yeah, that's what I want to do, and you're like, okay. And then you kind of wait to see how the rest of the table reacts, and online you're like looking at the faces, you can see one person is like, take a drink of their beer, like, trying to figure it out. So okay, cool. So some of the stuff I have here, I really like some of the things that you talked about. It's like, how is it going to feel like for this game, right? So I often talk about that, where it's like, I want it to feel like this. Like, that's how I want to feel as I'm running the game. And I'm hoping that the people that are joining the game want to feel the same way. It's like, so one of the reasons why I started building Final Round was I just got on this kick where I was playing Street. I have a 4-player Raspberry Pi powered arcade thing down here in my man cave, or nerd cave that my wife calls it. And I was just kind of going through the games. I was like playing Street Fighter on it and Marvel versus Capcom. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, I want to watch the Street Fighter movie, the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And then I started finding there was like this Street Fighter, like YouTube series almost. It's like about how Ryu and Ken trained and the rise of Akuma. And it's really awesome. It's like done really well. And I was like, damn, I want to play a Street Fighter game. But I started looking, and there was a couple games out there, but the mechanics were too complicated for me to learn a new game. So it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to build my own thing. And so, yeah, it's like trying to establish that tone within that game is because I wanted to play a game that felt like that. I run Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells, but lately the tone of that game isn't exactly what I want for my science fiction. I want to play more like, I want to do more of like a Star Wars type game, but I don't want to do Star Wars. So I'm building my own game called Galactic Grit so that I can get that feeling that I want out of the game. Right. So I do think it's important sometimes to have that feeling. And then other times I just want to play in big giant robots. Like, I want to play Mecha Hack, and, you know, and with Mecha Hack, you could go with like a BattleTech mech warrior tone, which is a little bit more militaristic and serious, or you could push it to Gundam Wing. So that game is fairly versatile in how you can establish tone. But if you were doing that in Mecha Hack, you would have to take some stuff out to make it BattleTech, because it's designed more like Pacific Rim-y Gundam Wing. But so you'd have to take certain modifications that the mechs can get out, because it wouldn't fit the BattleTech type mechs as you go through there. So anyway, so I like that. I think you're, what'd you say it, Morifak magazine example is great. Tone does exclude things, it does. And I really liked pickling yourself in it from for getting into the source material. I don't know if you stole that from someone or if that's an original quote, but
it might be Jason. I don't know. I was listening to someone talk about it. Yeah. I don't know if they said pickling, but that was what I thought about, right?
No, I like that. There's a couple more things I want to talk about, and it might spawn in some more stuff. But so when you look at tone, I have an argument for something. I don't know if you've heard me argue this. Who do you think establishes the tone of the game, or who has more influence on the tone of the game, the players or the game master?
It's just that dichotomy, huh?
Yeah. It's us versus them, man.
I think the GM has more influence.
Okay. I would argue the players have more influence because there's more of them. And if all four of them start doing burp and fart jokes, you might not be able to overcome.
Well, see, and it's interesting that you said jokes, because I also had, as I was thinking about your topic, I had a hot take on that. Because oftentimes what people say is going to upset tone is humor, comedy at the table. And that is never an issue for me. I should be careful, because it'll come to burn me in the end. Is, of course, the Monty Python jokes are ridiculous, right? But in my experience, no matter what the tone of your game, even if it's Call of Cthulhu, run by my favorite Call of Cthulhu GM, Chad, there's going to be laughter, because you are human people getting together to have fun, to play. And maybe particularly in a horror game like Call of Cthulhu, there's a theory out there that laughter comedy is it's releasing tension like that. I mean, so the scarier the game, the more tense, the more you're leaning into the tone, in theory, the more often you're going to laugh, because people are just going to have to release that tension. And add that to you're just a bunch of friends sitting there having fun. So, but then I will follow you, right? So if you move aside the whole idea of the jokes, right, which I think is just part of everything, and your players are just going to hijack the game away from you, then yeah, I don't know. You chose your players wrong, right? Or no one, yeah. I guess everything went horribly wrong at session zero. I'm curious about what observation you wanted to make after that line of questioning.
So I will go into the humor thing. I agree. So what I find challenging is I believe there's in-game humor. Your character's doing humorous things. Your character saying funny things, if it's the type of game where characters would say that. If I'm playing a buddy cop game and we're playing Tango and Cash, or, Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy in Another 48 Hours, name whatever buddy cop thing you want, there's going to be one-liners, right? Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, we're going to say things. There's going to be humor built in. That's actually going to be part of the tone inside of the game. Now, if we're sitting at the table and outside of the game, we're cracking jokes, like, oh, geez, here goes Gabe again, going to roll another two and, make up some funny thing or whatever, or make a funny comment about what happened in the game. That to me is not the tone of the game. That's just the tone of our relationship as friends and as players. Where I struggle is when it crosses the line where we're joking, it's funny, ha, 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 ha. And then the character's like, yeah, I jump on the demon's head and I fart on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because people can get carried away where it crosses the fourth wall and it goes to, where we were talking about something funny outside, not inside the game. And it goes in, and now people are just being silly inside the game. And that's one of the things for me that is one of the first things where I'm like, okay, hey guys, let's get this under control. And I'll be like, tell me what you really want to do, because I can't tell if you're being serious right now or not, right? Like, it doesn't happen very often, but I have had it happen.
Wait, I was gonna say, man, a couple that times. Happens in my current game. I mean, that was when we were kids.
Yeah,
but if that I happened, mean, my, I mean, going if that happened extreme... in my current game groups, I would just be like, I'd be totally cool. I just feel like I'm gonna spin up this campaign. And I'm gonna move on. I'm gonna hoist my pack on my shoulder, and I'm gonna walk over the horizon.
Jumping on a demon and farting on their head is an extreme example. I was using that to emphasize to the ex- to the extremists. But yeah, I would say the GM can establish initial tone, but I'll give an example. And Jason's talked about it, and he won't mind me talking about this because we've talked about it multiple times, maybe even on his podcast. I ran a Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells game on the Audio Dungeon Discord. I recruited random people because I was like, I want to run a game. Who wants to play? Right. Or maybe Jason even goaded me into doing it. Right. So I set up the game. People joined the game. The tone that I wanted to go for was Guardians of the Galaxy, kind of like Firefly, like somewhere in that type of thing, you know, crew on a spaceship, there's humor involved. So there's a little bit of magic, maybe not quite like Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe more like the character relationship part, but not the power part, because Solar Blades doesn't really have that built into it. And it ended up, Jason will fully admit, to him it was Futurama. And that's how he played it, and how at least one other player played it, who basically made Bender. And, you know, I adapted. It didn't, in the end, that aspect didn't matter to me, I guess, as much. But it did make me think, like, why was I unable to establish the tone that I wanted? I like Futurama, so it wasn't bad that it was Futurama style, but it's not what I what I sought out for in the beginning. So where did I go wrong in establishing the tone of that? You know, did I have any control anyway? Was Jason, and Jason will be able to call in and tell me, because he'll listen. Will Jason, I'll tell him to, I'll send a message. Hey man, I called you out on my podcast. You better respond. Was Jason always going to play Futurama? Because that's how he sees Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells when he looks at it. So it was going to be Futurama no matter what, you know?
Or were there little tells that he was picking up on, right? He's like, right. Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is my lead.
Yeah, exactly. And did I do those? Did the other players do them? Was it something that I didn't establish up front? And like I said, there were elements of that game I really liked. There were some other player issues. Not Jason wasn't one of them. That made me kind of be like, okay, I want this game to be done with, and so I can move on and do something else. I'm also not a forever GM. I'm not a forever campaign guy. I don't like running the same campaign forever. I like kind of to do a thing and then move on. So that was just one of those games where, you know, I tried to establish a tone and it was a different tone. Ultimately the game finished, so I would consider it a success, and no one seemed to be not enjoying the game. Maybe slightly like behind the scenes was I kind of like, why is the tone like this? And the other thing too is I didn't really go talk to anyone about it either, because I didn't feel like, at least in the flow of the game as it was going, that it was correctable, and two, was it, I didn't want to like ruin the game experience for anyone else. And the game experience was good enough for me where I was still like prepping every week. And it wasn't like I was like, oh my God, I got to run the game this week. Ugh, going to be more Futurama jokes. You know, I was able to, you know, that wasn't what I was feeling. It was more of like, it's kind of like when you make a dish and your intent was to make it savory or sweet, and it ends up, you know, the opposite, and it still tastes good. And you're like, oh, it tastes good. Everyone likes it. But it wasn't what I was going for.
Yeah, man, that's really good. Can I hold forth for a little bit? You gave me some ideas.
Yeah, go for it.
So what I'm really like, so that last metaphor is fantastic. You cooked something, and it's not what you expected, but everyone had a good time. You know, I think that totally happens in games quite a bit. And it's because of your observation and your feeling that players have more power because there's more of them. And I think we modern gamers, we love to destabilize that archaic notion of the GM, you know, lording it over the GM's world, and people are just lucky to be able to come into and inhabit my cosmos. And that's one of my favorite DMs is exactly that DM. I mean, that's classical gaming, and that's its own tone. It's its own genre. It's its own mode. But what you were describing reminded me of some of my more successful games. And I hope my Against the Dark Master campaign, which I'm kicking off, is going to be successful. And it might be because of the players. It might be because of the players setting the tone. Because what we did in session zero is I went in and Harrigan went in. I know others were kind of looking at the book and thinking about their ideas. We went in with no expectations for session zero. Now I take that back. Here's what, so for everyone to see, here's what I said. As a GM, I had a couple specific things and I made sure they were knowing this immediately. And one of my things was, okay, two things. Here we go. One is you only get to be human characters. I know that there's elves and there's dwarves and there's firbolgs and there's like all these things, but no, seriously, only human characters for you. The second thing was going to be structure. There's going to be a dark master, and what you have to do is carry an artifact from one place to another.
Sounds familiar.
Exactly. I'm like, this is what this game's supposed to do. So you can see I'm establishing that tone, right?
Yeah.
But I'm saying you can only be human characters. Now, after session zero, and this is what I also told him too, is I'm like, it's designed for long play. Against the Dark Master is a trad game in that way. And so you're not going to defeat the Dark Master, but if you choose to get off the train after what I'm considering the first chapter. Once you get the ring from the Shire to Rivendell, anyone who's had enough is free to go. You can all go, right? That will be, you know, because they bought the book because of me. I'm like, okay, here I am, I'm giving it to you. But I'm establishing tone through structure and through that one choice they get to make as characters as humans. Now, that said, now we have a Star Elf champion after session zero, and we have a half elf rogue. But that only came to be because what session zero was, we rolled on tables to generate the Dark Master. And then we're like, okay, let's figure this out. What is the Dark Master? What is this artifact? We rolled a cauldron from like the Black Cauldron. Our Dark Master, which is the pale spawn of hate, seeks this cauldron. And we got lieutenants for him, minions, spies. And then as they started to figure out how their characters worked in there, with the backstory we were making, suddenly Star Elves entered into the story. And so we're like, okay, now here's an opportunity for someone to play a Star Elf, if one so chooses. And then someone else had an opportunity to be a Half Elf. With their cooperation, with their input, we not only made the world, made the backstory, right? And like they did it all. So in a way, how are we setting tone? I had my piece as the GM, right? This is what I need, guys. And then they're like, we will do all the rest, inspired by the random tables that Against the Dark Master provides. And so when I said that session zero was an important part, I think of what a lot of people think about in session zero is they think that it's a lot of the GM being like, these are the rules, right? Is everyone on board? Get off now. I brought two rules and all the players brought the rest of the rules, if you will. And I just had to agree. And I think we have a fantastic beginning.
We'll see
how it goes.
Yeah, no, it sounds really cool. Now, how did you feel about one of your logic structures being broken where it was like, you're like only humans. And now you have a Star Elf and a half
right.
elf rogue.
And that's it. I was fine with that. I felt like I had to come out like bad cop being sure. like, total gate, right? Total gate. This is a human only campaign, right? Because I'm a sword and sorcery guy. Like, and the reason why is like, once you give a little bit, you know, everyone's coming with like some kind of concept.
Right.
And so I wanted the demi humans to arise naturally from the fiction. And so, and they did. And when they did, then I was okay with it. And in fact, Mirko, I don't know how I asked him if he was really serious, but Mirko at one point said, I kind of want to be a dwarf, right? And there was no opportunity for a dwarf at that time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you serious? And then later, the next morning, I wrote down all of our ideas and I created this like backstory, and suddenly dwarves entered into the backstory. So there was an opportunity. But maybe if Mirko's original character dies, his next character can be a dwarf, but
yeah, no,
that's all we ended up having. So that to answer your question, yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it because it makes sense. What I'm not okay with is, especially in a Tolkienian game like that, is like, I represent this culture and I'm just here for the quest. And here's this other person. I'm just here for the quest. Unless my structure was, we are going to begin in Rivendell, right? And you all came from wherever to get your walking orders from Elrond.
Yeah.
And here we go. I could begin a game that way too, which is definitely a structure I've considered for Against the Dark Master, but this one is a better way.
Yeah, it probably works pretty well for like a convention type game too, because it gives you a clear starting point and it puts them on the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get moving because you only have 4 hours to play the game or whatever and you need to get somewhere. Call it trolley. We won't call it a train, we'll call it a trolley. No, that's pretty interesting. So back to the cooking analogy, you were making spaghetti and it was going to be spaghetti and meatballs. And someone's like, hey, can we toss in some red pepper flakes and throw a little extra Parmesan cheese on top of that? And you're like, you know what? Actually, that'll be pretty good. We can go with that.
Or maybe it was a potluck and we all brought something to the potluck.
We all brought that to the other thing too. We all brought something to the potluck. Initially, it was Midwest fare only. and then Harrigan brought like kale chips or something. He lives out. He's close to California. I'm sure he eats kale chips. Him and Mirko probably.
We need to find out now.
Yeah, we will. I'll get him to listen to the podcast. Cool. So you said you wanted to go on a couple things. Did you want to go on anything else with that?
Did I have a couple things to hold forth? I might have lost my way as I was talking, but I'm circling around your idea about the player. Well, I had another anecdote. The danger. I could talk about the danger of all the players setting the tone. Oh yeah, you should just no. Actually, do you want? You should, no, it's that same group again. Never mind. Yeah, maybe it's the same group. Remember when I called in? You should just play that call. That's another.
So I'm going to be playing this call. So for structures, just so you know. I have a couple calls. I'm going to play them. I'm going to talk about them. And then I'm going to be like, and now we're going to talk to our special guest. and then it's going to be you. So a little behind the scenes.
I'll just leave that other thing alone then, because I feel like I might touch on some similar ground because it's that old Swords and Wizardry campaign, which was fantastic too.
Yeah.
Because it's because the players had ownership over that as well. And that helps set tone.
No, it totally does. If the players are in, and there's even a little bit of kind of self-policing, or they kind of discuss it, or everyone's really into it, then it really helps. One thing I'll talk about something about that concerns me with tone sometimes, and it can be around the type of genre you're playing, or even intellectual properties. And I've talked about this before previously on my podcast. Is so you're gonna run a Conan game, and let's say you now summon forth all of the people that like Conan fiction, Brett Blazinski, Joe from Reverse shows up, you know, some other people kind of roll in. Heck, maybe you even get Jeff Talanian.
Sounds like my dream team, man.
From Ash rolling in there.
Let's get this game going.
And you're going to run it and you know, Robert E. Howard himself shows up, the ghost.
He wouldn't understand what we're doing, but
yeah,
anyway.
What are these?
What are you guys doing?
Which are nerds. So, you know, do you ever kind of worry about that at all with like someone comes in and they're like, I love Conan. And you're like, do you ever think like, or like, oh man, is this person going to like take me to the carpet? Because my version of Conan might be different than his version of Conan. Or her version of Conan?
I have no concerns with Conan because Conan is such a wibbly canon. There's so many blank spots and so many. I mean, it's so like Howard. I don't even to go there, but Conan has no canon. I'll just straight up be like, Conan has no canon. Tolkien is way different. Back in the day, I was such a Tolkien nerd head that it was a problem. Like it was bad for me because when I was running back in like sixth grade, I think is when I started with, maybe fifth grade. I was probably more like sixth grade when I got serious into playing Middle Earth role-playing. I had read The Lord of the Rings like 14 times before I was even like, you know, playing the game. And I just kept reading them. I just knew everything about Tolkien. And I was such a respecter of canon that I would not allow anything in my games to have anything to do with established events according to the Bible, which is the Lord of the Rings and the Silmarillion. So it was a bit constraining when people talk about also rans and stuff like that. And I didn't even know it, right? I loved Middle Earth and I just wanted my players to experience Middle Earth. And I would just, and I think they did, but I never, ever got interfered with established canon. When I ran Fantasy Flights, I think I don't know if I've told you about this. You might have heard this before, but when I ran Fantasy Flights Star Wars for some young people at a local hobby shop here in my town of Winona, Minnesota, RiverQuest Games, which is no longer open right now, these people just love Star Wars, man. And I said, okay, here I come in, but you guys got to understand, I am Gen X. And here's what here's my session zero. This is my only session zero. I'm Gen X. And for me, the only thing that's canon, the only thing that's Star Wars is the first three films. And I am talking 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Just FYI, right? That's it. And they're like, okay, we get it. I'm like, you can make Mandalorians and whatever you want, but it's not going to mean anything to me. Right? There's only Boba Fett and he's dead. He fell in the Sarlacc pit and he died.
Yeah.
I know in the books he blew his way out of there and crawled out of the sand, but yeah. So headcanons. I think we might be talking about headcanons, right? And how do you navigate the various real estate that different people are bringing into the game? I think what you're really talking is about is some, well, actually guy, right? That's pushing the glasses up to lean into the stereotype. And if that's going to disrupt the GM, if that's going to be a big creak in the brakes, I could totally see that happening. And again, that just seems to be uncool behavior on a player's part, right?
Yeah. And that's why
any way of avoiding that.
I tend to avoid IP games as a game master. Because or games that so I love reading Tolkien. I like the movies. I know that can be a hot take for some people. The first three movies.
To Jason, apparently. Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, Jason doesn't like
what,
it at all.
Dude?
Yeah,
right, okay.
Live action ones are pretty good. I don't like the fact that they expanded the Hobbit into what it is, but
no, those are all uniformly awful. Agreed. Yeah.
If I didn't know anything,
hey everyone, we're giving opinions here. How are you?
If I didn't know anything about the Hobbit, then I would. They might be okay fantasy movies, but since I know about the Hobbit, that I have a problem with them. But anyway, it's funny. I have zero desire to run in a Tolkien style game, though.
I do Fourth Age, man.
I think
but then you only have human characters again, mostly.
Yeah,
that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I think Against the Dark Master, though, would be something that I don't know about the mechanics. Role Master mechanics are also important to me. But yeah, that sounds like it, like the whole thing that you described there. I was like, oh, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, you do. What I believe is you do Lord of the Rings, but it's your Lord. It's a different,
right.
It's not Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
it's like, we do that.
Right.
But now it's us. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do with Galactic Grit is I'm establishing my science fiction version.
Your empire.
And my empire.
Yeah.
And rebellion so that I don't have to
Jedi
deal.
Knights.
I don't have to deal with the whole like, wow, actually, you know, that thing. So
tell me more about Mandalorian culture.
I was actually, so I was at, I went, so one of my sons is out of town. My sons are not like old enough to go out of town by themselves. I dropped them off with grandma and grandpa. And so my wife, we had to work late. So my youngest son and I was like, hey, where do you want to go to dinner tonight? I gave him a couple options. We have a place in town here in Green Bay called Cheesesteak Rebellion. And it is a Star Wars themed cheesesteak restaurant in an old Bavarian style building. It's pretty awesome. They opened in 2020. And the fact that they were able to survive 2020 and are here today is pretty impressive, but it's a really cool place.
When Shows you go how in, the force is strong.
Yes. You go in there and they have TVs on and they're playing Star Wars, Harry Potter, Marvel, all on a different TV. It's you know, so depending where you're sitting. And then where I was sitting, Mandalorian season 2 was on. And I like hadn't seen it in a while. So when you mentioned Mandalorian, I was like watching it, and I was like, man, I should really rewatch all the Mandalorians. And I was like, it's a good series. But anyway, okay. So, is there anything else you want to talk about regarding tone, or do you want me to kind of summarize some of the stuff that we talked about?
The last thing I would say, and I don't know if I have anything specific to say about it, but for me, just the game is important. We are now we've moved out. Originally, all of our games were simulationist, and we are now into what I would call the emulationist era of role playing. And we don't really need to fight with game systems theoretically to establish the tone. We should be able to choose games now that give us all the tools required mechanically to reassert. Playing the game should be the tone, I guess is what I'm saying with a modern game design.
It's, you know, what's funny is you bring up this emulate, not simulate, is there was a big argument on Jason's podcast that emulate and simulate are the same thing. So I'm hoping that, because that's what we were talking about. We're talking about the same thing. We're talking about simulating, you know, I want to simulate, you know, World War II combat, or do I want to emulate the feeling of a World War II game and not worry so much about, you know, bullets and beans or, you know, the exact combat wounds.
To be pedantic, emulate and simulate are synonyms. They are the same word. But since they are actually objectively different words, why not use them to articulate what we're talking about? If anyone's interested, if you listen to session zero of our analytical dice, I don't know what the name
is. One too many seltzers.
Yeah. Listen to session zero, and I'll explain that I'm super cool with the gamist, narrativist, simulationist way lenses of approaching game design, but I prefer to add one more on, and it's emulationist. And it's just what you're talking about, Eric. It's emulating the feeling and not the physics of reality. And so physics, and the one I always use, you're talking about World War II, the one I always use is Star Wars. The physics of Star Wars is that people can dodge blaster bolts. And so what I loved about the first Star Wars game I played, which is still my favorite, West End Game Star Wars, is that was a mechanic in the game. Dodging blaster bolts. Every time a stormtrooper shoots at you, you can dodge that. No, you can't. You can't dodge lasers. You can't dodge even bullets, right? But in the emulation, right? It's not physical reality. That's what the game is, right? A game that feels like however they present reality in the property that you're going for.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's how I like it. Simulate is the physical, emulate is the feeling. So I think that's good. And I hope we restart that argument on Jason's podcast. Maybe I'll call in and just make that happen. That lasted multiple episodes. That was a good one. So a couple things just to reiterate. My brother told me I should always summarize at the end of the podcast. He's in academia like you are, or he used to be in academia. Now he's in the commercial industry. So the feeling is what you're going for. Tone excludes things. Art is choosing what elements are in and what elements are out in that art. It really does begin with the game. Session zero, setting and aligning expectations. Nothing new for anyone that's listened to any podcast or followed any sort of blog out there. Model it in the game. Steeping yourself in the source material. Pickling yourself. Becoming the Tolkien pickle. Humor doesn't necessarily ruin tone. Emulate and simulate, well, in the English world are synonyms. They're different.
And theoretically.
And I think you're like an English guy too, so I can use you as an expert on this too.
Go ahead. Words mean what we want them to, actually. So
you go. I'm an engineering nerd, so words are not my strong suit. And I think that covers everything. So yeah, Gabe, thanks for coming on. Reminder, Gabe has the Analytic Dice podcast with Kevin from Burn 2D6. You can find him on the Gaming NBS Discord server, and I'm sure other servers as well. He has products on DriveThruRPG, link in the show notes, regarding 2d20 Sword and Sorcery, a couple adventures. He's going to do some Against the Dark Master stuff. He seems like a very busy guy. Going to make tens of dollars on his products and be able to buy a burrito from the gas station. Gabe, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric.
Well, there you have it. That's another episode of the Omega 3D Chicken Coop in the books. Hope you enjoyed it. And please feel free to call in, email me. When I say call in, that's email me a voice message. Contact me on Discord, or you can go to omega3dchickengames.com and contact me through there. Hope everyone has a great evening. Check you later.